Today's podcast is sponsored by RadRx, your source for quality online education for interventional and diagnostic radiology coding, taught by subject matter expert Stacy Buck. For more information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Struggling to learn interventional radiology coding? If so, RadRx has the perfect solution for you. Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology online training program. In this program, interventional radiology coding expert Stacy Buck breaks down the complexities of interventional radiology coding in easy-to-understand terms so you can grasp this complex specialty. Through her course, Stacy has assisted many coders with little or no interventional radiology coding experience in successfully passing the CIRC exam on the first attempt. For additional information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Welcome to Who Cares What Stacy Says, a podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level. And now, here's your host, Stacy Buck.
Welcome to Who Cares What Stacy Says. I am your host, Stacy Buck. Thank you so much for joining me for my first podcast episode. In today's episode, I will answer the question, who is Stacy? But first, I want to briefly talk about what I envision for this podcast. This podcast will be one that will provide insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level. I don't really have a particular format right now that I plan on following. I want to see how the podcast will evolve like over time. So there's no formula for a particular episode. I don't plan to have a particular time limit on episodes. Some episodes may be longer, some episodes may be shorter. It will really just be dependent upon what topic I am going to be covering. Mainly what I'm going to be focusing on in this podcast is career advice. I really want to spend time sharing my experiences in the health information management and coding industry so others can benefit from that experience. So I'll be sharing a lot of observations from my almost 30 years in the business. Oh my goodness, I can't believe I've been working in this space that long. And I'll be sharing lots of my opinions with you during the podcast. So because a lot of it will be opinion-based, you may not agree with me in some instances, which is fine. Really, I'm just here to give you the benefit of my knowledge and my experience. And then if something applies to you and you feel that it will help you, you know, then by all means, you know, please, you know, take that advice. As far as specific topics, I will not be talking about coding during this podcast. I will not be teaching coding. We will not be getting into the technical aspects of coding. I do a lot of that in my work. And I wanted to do something that was more fun and enjoyable for me and then also for my audience as well. So the topics will consist of professional development topics, also personal development. A lot of times personal development things then spill over into our career. There's like an overlap between our personal life and professional life. So I'll have tips and things to share with you there. I'll also share, you know, life and career lessons during this podcast and, you know, just every week, you know, it will be something a little bit different. I might just share a funny story with you one week about something that happened and see any lessons that we can draw from that. I may just decide to share with you tips from a book that I'm reading that particular week. So the content is going to be varied. Initially, I don't plan on having guests, interviewing guests. I really want to see how the podcast evolves over time. And then I probably will at some point bring on guests and then do some interviews on some podcast episodes to cover different topics. And I do plan on releasing a new episode every 2 weeks, and those will be released on Tuesdays. So you'll want to look for those on Tuesdays. As far as communicating feedback about the podcast, there's actually going to be two email addresses where you can contact me. The first email address is podcast@radrx.com. That's podcast@radrx.com. In that email address, you can use if you want to submit future topic suggestions, if you want to give me feedback on a particular program, that's the type of information that you will send to podcast@radrx.com. There's also another email address that has been set up that is askstacy@radrx.com. And that's askstacie@radrx.com. And that will be for you to submit questions for me that you have about a career in coding, you know, any type of career advice, maybe certain challenges that you might be facing. And then also you can use that email address to send questions to me and ask me questions about myself. Maybe some fun questions you might want to send in, entertaining questions. I want to try to keep this, you know, informational, but also entertaining at the same time. So if there's anything that you would like to know about me on a personal level, feel free to submit that question, ask it, and then maybe I will answer that in a future episode. So next, let me answer the question, who is Stacy? So as I mentioned, I've been in healthcare almost 30 years. I actually started in healthcare in 1992 when I was 18 years old. And it's hard to believe that I have had such a long career. It doesn't feel like I've been in healthcare 30 years. I still can't wrap my brain around the fact that I'm that old, that I've been able to work in the field for that long. So I still, mentally, I still feel like very young, even though when I look in the mirror, I acknowledge that I'm definitely a little bit older. But my current position, as most of you know, what I'm most well known for is for being president and senior consultant at RadRx. And my consulting company, we perform auditing services for interventional and diagnostic radiology, also outsource coding services for those specialties, also do education as well. And then I've also done some expert witness work, which is a lot of fun. I've had the opportunity to do that. And so I've been working in RadRx for 13 years. I've been out on my own since 2008, and that has been an amazing journey for me and a great choice. And in a future episode, I'm going to talk to you about the pros and cons of starting your own business for those of you who maybe have that entrepreneurial spirit and want to strike out on your own. It's been an amazing experience. It has its ups, it has its downs. It's not for everyone. So I will share the benefit of my experience there in a future episode. As far as my credentials, I am credentialed as an RHIA, a Registered Health Information Administrator with the American Health Information Management Association. I also have the CCSP credential through AHIMA, and that's the Certified Coding Specialist Physician. I have the RCC certification, which is the Radiology Certified Coder, and that is through RCCB, the Radiology Coding Certification Board. And then I also have the RCCIR through them, which is Radiology Certified Coder Interventional Radiology. And I have the CIRCC credential through AAPC, which of course is the Certified Interventional Radiology Cardiology Coder. So that is the alphabet soup behind my name. I've also had some other credentials behind my name over the years that I kind of let drop off when they really weren't directly related to what I was doing. So obviously my focus has been on radiology for many years. So how I got my start in health information management, I didn't go right into coding when I started in the field. I accidentally entered the HIM profession. When people ask me how I got started, I say, well, I actually kind of fell into the profession. I didn't even know that health information management existed. I didn't know anything about it. And my career plan had actually been to go to college, get a bachelor's degree in business administration, and then go teach business classes at the high school level. That was my plan. Another career I had considered when I was in high school was becoming an attorney. That was appealing to me. And we had the reason why I didn't go that direction. Well, there are two reasons why I didn't go that direction. One, it was the thought of 4 years of college followed by 3 years of law school. That's a lot of time in school. And I don't really enjoy being in school. I don't enjoy being a student. So that was a lot of time. And that's a lot of money too, to do that. But the main reason why is during high school, I was a member of the Future Business Leaders of America, FBLA, and some of you may have been in FBLA as well. And I was considering going into some type of corporate law, some type of business law. And I actually won third place. I'm going to brag on myself. In high school, I won third place in the business law category at the FBLA districts. And I didn't even really study. That was the shocking part of the whole thing, that I didn't even really study for that competition. And it came in third in districts. And I was shocked. And I got to go compete at the state level. So I wanted to pursue something in business law. And so we had career shadowing day, and I wanted to shadow an attorney, but they couldn't find an attorney to set me up with. So they put me with a judge, and I got to spend the day with him. So you get to sit in on different legal proceedings, and sitting with him that day, going through all the activities and listening to him and listening to the attorneys and the different types of cases, I was bored. It didn't appeal to me. And so I thought, maybe that's not really for me. So that was really more the deciding factor, more than, you know, the additional years of law school after college. It was really that that kind of turned me away from that. And teaching, I always enjoyed teaching. When I was growing up, when I was a little girl, you know, some of you out there may have done this, when you would play pretend, whatever it is, I would have my pretend students, and I'd be in my bedroom, have all my pretend students, and I'd be teaching them different topics. I would have names for all them. I've had my grade book, I'd record their grades in there. You know, I had lesson plans and everything. Like, I would do that kind of thing when I was growing up. And that was my favorite thing to do, to like play teacher, to like be the teacher. So that was always a passion of mine. But what happened is I started my first semester in college, and I got a job through a temp agency at a surgery center, which was right next to the college. And I was working in the medical records department. And initially I was brought in, interestingly, the first thing they brought me in for, they said I was going to be helping in the billing department. But then when I got there, they said, we need you to help out in medical records. So it was cleaning things up. It was, you know, cleaning up the filing, backlog of that. It was also doing analysis of medical records, those basic functions that many of you listening have probably done in your career. And my boss at the time, she was an ART. This was before we had the RHIA and RHIT credentials. It used to be the RRA. And an ART. It was a registered record administrator and then an accredited record technician. And she was telling me about this career. And back then, it wasn't known as health information management yet. This was back in 1992. They started to shift to from medical record administration to health information management around the mid-90s, I believe, is when they made the official switch. It was around the time that I started school, my bachelor's program for HIM. But I was like, are you kidding me? You need a degree to like do this? Like, she's telling me about, oh, you have the 2-year degree, the 4-year degree, get credentialed. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. I didn't understand why you would need a college degree to do what she was doing. But then the more time you spend working in healthcare and working in a medical records department, you start to understand all the complexities of it, you know, all the knowledge that you need to have in order to carry out the job. So what ended up happening was, so I'm in my first semester of college, and so I have a full-time course load, and then I started increasing my hours at work. I started out working part-time, and then I increased them to full-time hours. So I had a full-time course load as a freshman in college, I had a full-time job, and I was partying full-time. Well, you can't do all three of those things full-time. So after one semester in school, I decided I was going to drop out of college and just work full-time and party full-time and not do anything else. And a lot of people were shocked that me, the, you know, star student, the studious one, would be the one who would drop out of college. And I'm like, I'm not stopping. I plan on going back. I just, for me at that time in my life, I felt it was too much. It was like overwhelming. And I just didn't want to do that. I wanted to put it on hold. So I spent the next year, I want to say maybe I took a year and a half off from school before I went back into it. And so after a year and a half off, I decided to go back to school, but rather than being at the 4-year university level, I decided to do my first 2 years at the community college level. And at the community college level, I earned an associate's, an AS degree in business administration. And then from there, after I finished that associate's in business administration, then I went to Florida International University in Miami, Florida, to earn my degree in health information management, that 4-year degree. So I still had that interest in business. So I got the 2-year degree in business, and then I went on to HIM. And so people ask me, you know, why did you make that transition? Why did you make that decision? Well, there were a couple of reasons. You know, one, I told you I wanted to go and get a business degree, and then I wanted to teach business in high school. Well, people who come out of school, well, let me kind of start here. So looking at the reality of the situation, if I were to go be a high school teacher, high school teachers don't make a lot of money. There's not much there. Florida has always been one of the states that is paid lower. I don't know what teachers make now, but back then, I think they're trying to up the pay scale in Florida, but they weren't paid very well. So there's the reality of that. And then, so when I graduate with this, you know, bachelor's in business administration, what else can I possibly do with this? Well, so many people were graduating with a bachelor's in business administration. They were like a dime a dozen. It's very generic, you know, to a certain degree. So what does it really qualify you for? So I felt that going for a more specialized degree, a bachelor's in health information management would help me because I was working in the field. I was already out there. So I spent about, I think a little less than a year at that surgery center. And then I decided to look for a job elsewhere because of a lot of things that were going on at the surgery center. I could tell you a lot of interesting stories and things that have happened with different employers and different jobs over the years. I'm sure we all have our stories, but that was never the most pleasant place to work, but it really got to a point where it became unbearable. So I looked elsewhere. So after I left the surgery center, I went to work in a rehabilitation hospital. And it's a physical rehab hospital where they do physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, inpatient and outpatient. And I was hired there as a medical records coordinator. And so there I went into the department again, doing filing in medical records, also doing records analysis. Those were the basic functions there. And then over time I was allowed to learn coding on the job. And so I was doing inpatient and outpatient coding for the rehabilitation hospital. And I spent 6 years in that job. That's the longest that I've ever been anywhere other than my personal company. And the reason why I stayed there so long was because I was going to school from 1994 to 1998, and I was working there from 93 to 99. And it was a great place to be because my director at the time was very supportive of me in pursuing this as a career. She worked my schedule around school. She helped me with my projects with school. She was just really, really great in helping me. So it was a great place to be during that time. I got tuition reimbursement as well, paid for almost all of my schooling. It paid for all of my associate's degree, the tuition reimbursement, and it paid for almost all of my bachelor's degree. A little bit had to be kicked in, but it covered everything. So that was a nice benefit. And then once I graduated from school, I decided I was going to start looking for other jobs. And I went on many, many interviews and interviewed for a lot of different positions. And I even turned down some jobs. I was offered a job as an assistant director of HIM, which I turned down. I was offered another job to be a manager of a brand new clinic of a large health system. I turned that down. And, you know, a few years later, I kind of regretted turning those down, but way, way, way down the path, I don't regret turning those down now. It's interesting how life works out. I think you somehow end up where you're supposed to be, and some things that you regret today, you may not regret 5 years from now. But anyway, so I went to work for a large hospital corporation after I graduated. It was about not quite a year after graduation. There are two reasons why I left. One, I wanted to do something different now that I was out of school. And then two, it was a $10,000 a year pay increase, the position that I found. So I was in a position of revenue analyst in that job, and I was an employee of the corporate office, but they placed me in a local facility here in South Florida. And in that position as revenue analyst, I had a few different responsibilities. One of the responsibilities that I had is that I was doing laboratory compliance audits. I would conduct those on a regular basis, but the main function that I had in that role was to do charge auditing. And there are different types of charge audits that you do and different reasons why you do them. So some of the audits I was doing patient request audits. If a patient had an issue with their bill, they would call me and they would ask me to audit their bill for them, and I would do that. Also, I was doing what was called an insurance defense audit. So if the insurance company was disputing itemized charges on a bill, then they would audit, and then I would do my audit, and then we would have to come to some type of agreement between the findings for both of us. And then I also did something called stop loss audits as well, which I'm not going to get into now what that is. Some of you might know, but I was having to audit charges on a daily basis. And auditing charges, itemized charges on hospital bills, is tedious and boring. It is not fun. And that is what I was spending my days doing. And I just did not like it at all. Didn't like the job. And then on top of that, the place where I was at, I didn't like the facility that I was at. And again, it was a very challenging environment to be in for many reasons. So one of the first lessons that I learned from that is don't necessarily jump and take a job because of a big pay jump. It may not be what you think it's going to be. But anyway, I had the experience to do something different. And so after being there for, it was less than a year, I started like interviewing for stuff, but it took me almost a full year to find another job, which then brought me into the field of radiology. So back in 2000, I went to work for a company called US Diagnostic, which no longer exists. But I went to work for them as their first and only internal auditor. So I was hired to perform coding audits, mainly coding audits of their, at the time, I think they had 85 imaging centers in the United States, to do coding audits for them, and then also do other types of internal audits as well. And I'd had no radiology experience whatsoever, but they really liked my background that I had, particularly my prior experience as the revenue analyst and doing lab compliance audits and charge audits and things of that nature. So even though I had no radiology experience, that experience in the job I didn't like actually served me in getting the next job. And I would say US Diagnostic was one of my most favorite places to work. Worked with great people, just a great time. And I was sorry that that job came to an end. The company ended up going through restructuring, different pieces of it were sold off. And then eventually, it was broken up and we ceased operations because pieces of the company were sold off to other companies. But I started out working there as their internal auditor. And then after that, I was promoted to corporate compliance officer. And corporate compliance officer was like my dream position. Like when I started at US Diagnostic, that was around the time I started there, I just had this, dream. I'm like, I want to be a corporate compliance officer somewhere, somehow, someday. Like that was like my ultimate goal, to be in that position. What I found that I enjoyed in the field is being in the revenue side of the business, which now we refer to as revenue cycle. Anything involved with revenue cycle and then also compliance. That was really what I enjoyed doing. It's where I enjoyed being. And so that was a great experience to be in that corporate compliance officer role while I worked there. And as I mentioned, that job came to an end and we were all looking for work from that company. And so I needed a paycheck and I wasn't having any luck finding a job doing what I wanted to do. So it so happened that there was a company that contacted me I'll say the name of the company. They don't exist anymore either. They were bought by another company, but some of you may remember QuadraMed if you've been in the business for a while. So QuadraMed had reached out to me. I don't know how or why we got in contact, but they had an opening for an application specialist, and that was a job training on their coding software and their compliance software. And to be honest, I wasn't super interested in it when they contacted me, but we had, a few conversations and they really wanted me and we went through salary negotiations. And then once we, negotiated the salary was, a nice jump from what I had been making. And I said, I'm like, let's do this, because there wasn't anything else out there that I was finding at the time for the space I wanted to be in, that, reimbursement piece or that compliance piece. So I took that job and I stayed there for probably, 7 or 8 months. I wasn't there very long. I don't even list that on my resume because the reason why I didn't list it on my resume is because it didn't really add to my career path and what I was trying to work towards. So I was doing consulting on the side during that time, like on my own. So I used that to fill the gap on my resume. So I was still working. I just didn't list that as a position. And I just left there because traveling almost every week was not my thing. I'm not big on traveling. And the work itself, just training on software, to me was very boring and very redundant. And it just was not challenging enough for me. So that's why I ended up leaving that position. Then when I left there, I took a job as a home health compliance coordinator. I think that was the title. At a company that, again, no longer exists. It's interesting, over the years, all these companies get sold off, you know, bought out by other companies, and so they're not even around anymore. And there I was doing compliance audits for home health services, and that was very different from what I had been accustomed to. And I wasn't there very long. That was another one of those jobs where I was there maybe 4 or 5 months in that position. And at first it was interesting because it was something different, but I kind of learned that it probably wasn't a good fit for me. Then I was in a situation where the company was going through changes and restructuring, new management was coming in, they were changing things. And then my job became very different from the job that I had actually interviewed for and had been hired for. So that was an issue. And fortunately, thankfully, they ended up laying me off after I was only there about 4 or 5 months. This is a funny story. I can remember this job. I didn't like it at all. And I had been interviewing like crazy. I mean, like crazy. I was applying all over the place for compliance positions, any facility I could like find, lots of hospitals and just everywhere. And I wasn't getting any job offers, even though I was doing a ton of interviews. And I'm like, but I can't leave this place until I like land another job. Well, 1 week I had it. I was so fed up with it. And I'm like, you know what? I'm like, this is on a Friday. I'm like, I'm just going to quit today. I'm like, I can't do this. I'm like, I just need like hope and pray that I get a job offer based on all these interviews I've been doing, because I can't take one more day of this job. And then my boss called me at lunch, and she's like, before lunch, she said, can you come see me at lunchtime? And I was like, sure. And I was like, you know what? I think they're gonna let me go today, because they had been laying off a lot of people, like, you know, over a period of time. So I went to meet with her at lunchtime, and she said, we need to go down to HR. And so I knew what was coming at that point in time. So they tell me that they're, you know, letting me go. It has nothing to do with my job performance. It's just the changes that they're making, and they no longer need me. Sign all the paperwork for the severance package and all that stuff like they usually do. And I was very quiet, and I wasn't saying anything. And I think that they thought that I was like super upset, or I might snap or something, because I was eerily quiet. And one of them said to me, I can't remember who, they're like, are you okay? Are you okay with this? And I said, oh yes. I said, I'm thrilled. I said, I actually was planning on quitting at the end of today. I'm like, thank you so much. And the looks on their faces was absolutely priceless. Because now I had a severance package, and now I could collect unemployment. And it was a matter of hours, you know, away from me making that decision, where if they hadn't done it that day, I would have quit at the end of the day. I would have had no unemployment and no severance package. So I remember driving home, and I was like so happy that I got laid off. I was thrilled. Not a lot of people are happy when they lose their jobs. I mean, some of you may have had horrible jobs, and if you came out on the good end of it with a little bit of severance, where you can collect unemployment, you might have been happy too. There are probably those situations out there. But anyway, so now I'm back to looking for another job. So after that, I went to work for another company as their VP of coding and compliance. And so I was still out of radiology. So really for 2 years, I was away from the radiology space. I was on a full-time basis. So I was still doing consulting on the side in that space, but I was away from it. So now I was in a company that wasn't doing radiology, but they wanted to expand and do multi-specialty stuff. And in that job, I was doing E&M coding audits. And that was my first time doing E&M coding audits. And I learned that I hated E&M coding, and I wanted no part of it. So I was like, I'm not, you know, cool with this. I'm not really, you know, liking all the work that I'm doing. But beyond that, it wasn't so much the work, because I didn't do E&M audits all the time. I did a lot of different things. It wasn't so much the work as it was I was working for a very difficult person who treated people very badly and was very disrespectful. So that was a reason why I was considering leaving there. I hadn't made that final decision to leave because there were a lot of benefits to working there, but it was a consideration. And it just so happened that one of the former VPs who had worked with me at US Diagnostic, when he left US Diagnostic, he had bought one of the imaging centers from the company. He started his own imaging center, and he had a management company that ran the imaging centers, and he wanted to start a billing company as part of this management company. Right. So he asked me to come work with him and serve as a partner in this billing company and help with, you know, setting up the billing company and then also do consulting and things of that nature. And I could have an ownership interest in the company. So I was thrilled. This was a great opportunity. It was a way for me to get, you know, back into radiology and get out of this job where I was having some difficulties, you know, with the owner of this other company. So I was thrilled to move on and do that. And so I was there for 3 years. Title there was VP of Coding and Compliance. And there I was doing consulting in the radiology space. And that's when I started to branch out into interventional radiology once I was at Southeast Radiology Management. And I'll talk about my journey into interventional radiology coding. I'll talk more about that in a future podcast episode. And then after 3 years at Southeast Radiology Management, you know, my partner decided he didn't want to be in healthcare anymore. He wanted out. So that was the end of Southeast Radiology Management. And then I was like, what do? Do I go find another job? Do I try to strike out on my own? I'd always wanted to have my own company. I always wanted to have my own business. But it was very challenging for me to take that leap because when you are your sole source of support and you have nothing or no one to fall back on, that can be very scary to step out in that direction. So what happened there is fortunately we had a few clients where I was already doing consulting when we were winding down operations. So these clients re-signed with me, with my company. So I didn't start the company with nothing. I started it with a little bit. And then I had signed a big contract, a new contract that we hadn't had under Southeast Radiology Management, big consulting contract that was supposed to pay me a big salary for 6 months. And then something happened with this contract and this person. There were just things that went on. And anyway, I had to get an attorney involved and all of that. And then we ended up like settling because this person breached the contract and then was saying I was breaching the contract and they wanted to terminate. And it was a mess. So my big chunk of money was like gone. And I'll probably tell you that story in a future podcast when I talk about the pros and cons of starting your own business. And so that really was challenging because now with that going away, I was left with almost no money coming in initially in those startup months for RadRx. But here I am still 13, you know, almost 13 years later. It's been a great journey and I'm happy that I finally went out on my own. Circumstances pushed me to do it. I don't know that I would have taken the leap if not for circumstances pushing me to do it. And I can tell you now, being out on my own, I would have a very hard time going back and working for anyone else, having had my own company for all of these years. And then also what I did a little bit of is I did some teaching as an adjunct instructor at Indian River Community College, now Indian River State College. I was an adjunct instructor in their HIM program, I think for about three years or so I did that. So I was able to teach at the college level. And that I was doing that when I was in my 20s. And so I had a lot of students that were older than me. And so that was kind of like an interesting dynamic to be teaching at the college at such a young age. So that is my career path and how I ended up where I am at today. As I mentioned, I love what I'm doing these days. Really, my passion is education. It always has been, you know, going back to that little girl teaching her pretend students. And I'm so grateful that I can live out my passion teaching and actually make a good living at it. So even though I didn't end up teaching in the way that I thought I would, you know, when I first went into HIM, I didn't think I would necessarily be teaching. It was more of a practical choice to go into this field. And then in every job that I held, I would actually look for opportunities to improve processes, make things better. And I would always volunteer to learn new things. And I would volunteer to educate other people. So I was always teaching like all along. And then in college, you do presentations and things of that nature. And then, you know, you build your confidence from there, you know, in that aspect. So I've had a wonderful career. Now I get to do some expert witness work. Like I said, remember I wanted to be an attorney. That was another career choice early on. And so the expert witness work that I've done in my consulting company has been a lot of fun because you get to act in that attorney role and you get to, you know, write counter arguments and arguments. And it's super, super fun to do that. And I would love to do more expert witness work. That's probably other than teaching, other than the education where I'm teaching other coders, the expert witness work is really the second most enjoyable to me when I get into those types of projects. So that's a little bit about my career path. There are a lot of interesting stories and experiences that have occurred in many of those jobs over the years. And in some future podcasts, I will probably talk about some difficult experiences and some different things that I went through. Like I said, I want to really share the benefit of my experience. And I think now when I've been in this field for so many years and I've been through so many difficult situations and I've worked with so many difficult people, it's easy to look at things, you know, retrospectively and say, this is how I should have handled this situation. This is what I should have done in this situation. Sometimes when you're going through it, it's not the easiest thing, you know, to deal with. But anyway, as I said, I would like to give all of you the benefit of my experience. And before I wrap up today's episode, I just have to give a big shout out and a thank you to Brian Quee, who is the host of the Not Elsewhere Classified podcast. He has been encouraging me for a long time to start a podcast. And I would tell him, I'm like, Brian, I don't know what I would talk about on a podcast. I don't want the pressure of that. I don't think I could come up with that much content. And so he's interviewed me twice for his podcast. And the last interview we did was, I think, last November or December is when we recorded the interview. And again, I was having that conversation with him. Like, I just don't know how I can come up with content on a regular basis. And there was one question that he asked me, and I gave him a very lengthy answer. So he said to me, he goes, you know, you say you don't have, you know, that much content, like you'd have trouble coming up with content. He's like, I asked you one question and you talked for almost an hour nonstop and you talked about five topics. So he said, go back. He goes, I'm going to send you this recording unedited. Go back and listen to it and you will see all of the different things that you covered and where you have plenty of podcast content. So I did, and he was right. There are so many things that I feel passionate about and I always want to talk to people about, and I don't really have the opportunity because I'm so busy talking about coding and teaching coding. So this podcast, I'm looking at it as it's going to be fun for me. It's going to be something fun to do, something new to do. If it ever starts to feel like work, then I probably won't want to do it anymore, to be quite honest. I like to enjoy what I do. I don't like to do things that stress me out or put a lot of pressure on me. But thank you to Brian for giving me the push to get started in the podcast. And then also I have to thank him for coming up with the name of the podcast. Who cares what Stacy says? It was interesting when we were having a little brainstorming session one night, and it wasn't necessarily to come up with the name of the podcast. We were talking about other things, but I was struggling to come up with a name. And just in general conversation, as he and I are talking back and forth, I said something, I go, but who really cares what I have to say? And he's like, who cares what Stacy says? And he's like, that's it. I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm like, I love that name. So that's how the name came about. So thank you to Brian Quee for giving me, you know, the push into podcasting, helping me name the podcast. And he's also been helping me out and just answering a lot of questions. He's an amazing guy. Brian, if you're listening, you should be listening. You're an amazing guy. And I thank you so much for all of your support in getting me into podcasting. And thank you everyone for tuning in to this first episode of Who Cares What Stacy Says. And I can't wait to be back again in 2 weeks with episode 2. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Thank you for listening to Who Cares What Stacy Says. You can connect with Stacy on social media. You can find her business page for RadRx on Facebook, and you can connect with her personally on LinkedIn. Don't forget to check out the online training courses offered by RadRx. Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology Online Training, or Cracking the Diagnostic Radiology Code Online Training. Thanks again for tuning in to Who Cares? cares what Stacy says? A podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level.